And in the studio, I've got a local counsellor therapist, Marie Howarth. Morning.
Morning, Aaron.
How you doing?
I'm very good, thank you.
Is it a bit cold? You're wringing your hands.
No, I'm good. That's good. Just me getting ready for this session.
That's a bit worrying.
Maybe I'm a bit nervous.
Surely not after all this. Now, don't move the microphone away. It's got to be close.
Stop growling me.
This is always it's an ongoing battle.
It is. Never mind.
So Marie comes in every couple of weeks and we have a chat, and we've just been talking for a little while off the air about how we're going to get into this particular issue. And I guess I'll just start off with a story that I was telling to Marie before, which is I remember in the early days of the internet, early 2000s, before social media, we used to talk about flame wars, where there'd be a comment section or an email user group or a chat group or one of those Yahoo chat groups, and you have flame wars with someone you disagreed with. And they were always with people that you didn't know, pretty much guaranteed. But it was a full-on argument. And I started wondering whether they were worth getting involved in. But we talked about flame wars. But it never came into my personal life or our personal lives until one day, I think it will have been after the Raglan Notice Board was formed, someone CC'd me, but they incorporated me using Messenger. No, not Messenger. I don't know. Something on Facebook anyway. Hooked me into a discussion where someone I interview occasionally, and I don't anymore, there's nothing to do with it though, but they'd said something that someone else disagreed with and they didn't like their attitude, and so I'd got connected into this conversation with the comment that they weren't going to listen to the station anymore because, you know, and it was just like, and I was just like, what's going on here? And that was the first time that flame war thing had happened between people that I knew.
Mm.
And then thanks to Facebook, it's become increasingly common and normalized now. And I think we now view our fellow community members in a different way.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of us. And research has also shown that we're now more angry than we used to be and more prone to conflict. And I think, you know, there were times, Marie, when sometimes being angry is justified and logical, and having an angry response might be appropriate at times, but we're now carrying more anger, and maybe we can't see, especially in the moment, it's quite hard to think whether that anger is appropriate right now or not, and we might just be reacting to it.
Well, it's interesting, you bring up the word anger, and actually that's a secondary emotion that we have. What we first have is the feeling of sadness, or we're hurt, but we're so conditioned to go straight to the feeling of anger that we don't like to go to that feeling of being hurt or sad about something, because it's not a comfortable place to be for us, so we go straight to anger. But actually what we're really feeling is hurt or sad about a situation that we can't have any control over or change. And there's a grief there, there's a sadness, but we tend to, skip over that and move straight into the angry response. And when we are driven by our feelings like that, there's no logical thinking process happening, and our cognitive ability tends to go offline. We are reacting out of an emotional response, and as we know, feelings change all the time, so then they're not something we can rely on to take us the long distance in something, because we're not always going to feel the same response every single time. So because feelings are changing and they change with situations and conversations and depending on what's happening around us, they're unreliable to make decisions, to base decisions around a feeling. Because, like I say, that is going to change. It's even like when we fall in love, the feeling is amazing, and we have this incredible honeymoon period. But if we were driven by that feeling all the time throughout that relationship, well, it's not going to work, is it? Because at some point that honeymoon period is going to end and we're going to have to start to face some realities.
That sounds harsh.
Yeah, I know. But we've all experienced it, the first argument or the first disagreement where we, get some resistance from somebody or our partner. you know, this person that we're in love with, and so we can respond emotionally back. So, you know, to be able to stay in a thinking process can be, it's intentional when we do this. It's not something just happens in emotion, in an emotional moment, okay? So in an emotional moment, we aren't thinking clearly, and our emotions are definitely taking charge of what our next step is going to be.
Yes, yeah, and we all know about that.
Well, we might know it, but do we really know it, Aaron, or do we ever sit in that enough to analyse it or look at it or be a little bit critical even of it, if this is healthy for us or helpful for me to be always responding from these emotional places? Like, is it doing me good? Is my health good for it? Is my attitude good for it? Am I a happy person because of these responses? You know, if we were to look a little bit deeper about how this is affecting us, we may challenge some of the responses that we are giving that are emotional in these times of wanting to feed something back in to let you know what it's really about.
Set you straight.
Set you on the right path here,
yeah,
buddy.
So, I mean, sometimes we get to a point where we might have reacted strongly a few times, and then afterwards we're like, I really don't want to be doing that again.
And you might
have that thought with you the next time it happens. But I almost feel like if you're still angry, and we've just talked about how there's raised levels of anger around, probably because of social media, then it might be quite hard to keep that little thought present in your head that you don't want to do that anymore.
Yeah. So, and I think you kind of to touch on where we're getting a lot of this from in social media, we, instead of having face-to-face conversations where we are picking up on how the other person is actually responding to something or how they are saying what they are saying, we're doing it online, and so we are guessing what this person, what the feeling is behind it, whether they are, meant to be a judgment, or whether it's meant to be telling us off, or whether it's giving us information, or whatever it might be. We don't know, you know, we only pick up on what, how we are responding to that information we're receiving. So we are, we have no idea, really, the backstory of that information. We're just receiving what's in front of us, and we get a response to that. We get an anger, and we feel, you know, we have to kind of put something right, or this isn't, you know, what you said was wrong. We're just seeing a snippet of something, and our emotional reaction to that is massive, and it can cause heaps of other people to react too to that. So look, what we are doing is we feed this negativity across the world. Even it touches every part of us, you know, wherever we're living, it's accessible, these feelings that we're having to responses that we're reading on Facebook that are just written words, you know, and we have this massive response to it. So, yeah, I do think that in relationship, if we were talking to that person in real life, we may have a different reaction to that. We may want to ask a few more questions or know more or be interested in how that person is thinking, rather than just seeing something and giving our opinion back and responding through an emotional reaction to what we've read. Yeah, so we've got in here, your diet is not only what you eat.
This is something we wrote down before the interview.
So, yeah, I mean, what are we feeding and what are we allowing in into our everyday living that we are having a reaction to that's not healthy for us? So if you're reading stuff on Facebook and you've got an opinion about something, and you might have been having that opinion for 6 months, you know, we can change our opinions too, you know, over time, and you might have been stuck in a mindset of this opinion and been feeding it, you know, after 6 months, how are you feeling now? You know, what's your health like? What's your relationships like? How are you reacting in your work situations? Because, you know, your diet is not only what you eat, it's what you allow into your being, into your thinking life, into your heart, into your responses. Yeah.
I come back to the news again.
Mm.
And the importance, actually the importance that politics plays, we're given the, like as someone who's really focused on politics and I've tried to get behind the politics to find out what's motivating it, what's really going on, but the importance that politics plays in our life I think is overstated. Like it's not the only thing happening in our lives. Like we're humans and we exist in relationship to people. Mm. Like no one, you can't be alone. Our relationships are almost, that's a defining nature of being a human being, is that we live in relationship.
Yep, absolutely.
And you know, there's fights about, you know, it used to be capitalism versus communism.
Right.
And people got very wound up about that. And we all heard about how awful life was in communist countries, which was probably propaganda. But the thing is that even if it was true, that those people there were still living their lives, they still had relationships, they still fell in love and had families, and all that stuff was still present regardless of the economic or the political situation. And so coming back here, we get so excitable about what's going on with politics. And we think it's really important. I think it might not be that important. I think it might not be as important as
we are receiving it.
Our impressions.
The impressions that we get from someone else's life. That's like, you know, when we often I think, you know, when I talk about, you know, working as a village or as a community, you know, and I get often my thinking goes to Africa and those villages and how they survive and communicate with each other.
Yep.
You know, and I think, you know, looking back, that comes to mind because there's real relationship there. There's real people talking to each other and having to work through something, you know. If you are writing something down and handing a note to somebody, you know, about a situation that's upset you, you're not going to get the real understanding behind those words. And it's different if someone speaks it to you. So I think that we are receiving a lot of information coming through the written word and then our perspective and our viewpoint and our worldview, you know, sits on top of that. So it might not be a truth, so to speak. It becomes our truth. It might not be the truth. It's our emotional truth to what we're reading. So we believe that those people are living in terrible circumstances, right? And I think of, you know, villages in Africa and I might think they're living in dirt huts and they've got no roading or anything like that, and yet we can pull out stories of the happiest and most beautiful.
Well, this
families.
Is what Europeans say when they go there. They're like amazed at how happy everybody is, but they don't know that if they don't know what they're missing, you can't be sad about it.
No, and so, we could read a story about that and put our own emotions attached to it, how terrible that must be, how they don't have running water and they've not got this and they've not got that, you know, they must be living in just terrible, and some of them maybe are, but reality is if you were going to, you want to really know a truth, then you need to speak to the person who is experiencing that truth and get their truth about that situation, and then it's not you're not muddying the waters then with your own emotional belief or whatever it is might be sitting there about what that truth is for you. It's going to be different for them.
Well, anthropologists have been telling us for decades now that the happiest people they've ever found on the planet are usually living in a jungle somewhere, completely oblivious to the modern so-called civilized world.
Yeah, we've been, you know, the industrial revolution has, you know, look where we are.
Well, it's not all. But here's the thing again, like, we don't want to get too far down that path because we still have our humanity and our relationships if we want it. And we still have the people we fall in love with in our kids and families and friends in our community. If we remember, if we haven't got caught up in fighting these battles.
So that's really good because that's coming down to a very baseline level, which is we still have relationship, we still fall in love, we still have children and we've got family. Those seem to be, you know, those fundamental core things that we stand on, foundations that are our humanness that cause us to be in relationship. The most important thing we'll ever do is be in relationship with each other and learn how to do that without trying to tear each other down or, you know, destroy each other. Because if we live in a negative environment where everything is about we have to fight for this and we have to fight for that, none of that is healthy for us. So I go back to your diet is not only what you eat, you know, it's what you're putting in. If everything is a struggle, then your whole nervous system will be on high alert because you are struggling. You know?
So you're saying you can actually put yourself into high alert needlessly?
Oh, you'll get well. We will become used to being in that place, Aaron. We could do a whole section on that. I mean, we get used to responding a certain way because we have trained ourselves to be like that. So learn how your body works, the adrenaline system, the high cortisol. You know, you want more dopamine and you want oxytocin, you want the doctor feel good feelings. But if you are putting yourself in stressful situations where you have to be on high alert, then the body gets addicted to that cycle, that way of working, releasing that kind of energy to keep you going.
So I've heard someone say it makes you feel alive.
Well, that's adrenaline.
Yeah,
it makes you feel alive. But then you get into cortisol, which is your fight, flight, or freeze zone. And if you are working from that place, always on the fight, then your cortisol levels will be high. And that is very, very unhealthy for your body.
But
this
you
is
might
not good stuff.
But you don't find out for a decade or two.
Well, what will happen is you will find is that your nervous system will become more, you will start to notice it more, you'll become more anxious, you will become more on high alert, you know, you may find that you're more grumpy, you're more always finding things that are, you know, pulling negative things out and never seeing the good things in life. Mm.
So there's two questions. One is how do we get out of that state and the other is how do we reconcile with all the people we've been having, all our community members we've been having flame wars with on Facebook.
Well, let's go to that one.
I struggle to think of really good examples of reconciliation and that I just can remember in life and happening around me. Like, we're not good at it. And I know one of our DJs who's not from New Zealand is like, oh, New Zealanders just can't deal with conflict. Right. As soon as there's the slightest sign of anger, their shutters go up, and we just never talk to the person again.
Yeah, we're not very good at it, are we?
No.
No, it's not a comfortable place for us. So I was thinking about this, and I think it's not so easy to not respond to somebody from an emotional place when we are that causes an emotional charge in us.
Like when we're already there.
Yeah, when we're already there. Like, say you don't like somebody, you see them on the street. It's like, now what do I do? You know, do I turn the corner?
Do I cross the road?
Do you cross the road? Like, you don't want to pass them, you know? And what is happening here? Like, you've got to tune in with that chicken. This is a feeling. You're getting a feeling when that happens, eh? So it's not a nice feeling and you want to disappear from that and you don't want to have to face it. So we will do something, respond in a way to avoid that situation. My encouragement here.
Yes. Give it to
us. So there is some work in Gestalt therapy called the two chair work. And it just means that you get two chairs, you sit in one, and imagine the person that you don't like or that you're having an issue with is in the other chair, and start practicing how it is you want to respond to them. Now, I know this can sound a bit weird and a bit but when we're caught off guard and we don't know what to do in the moment, we we don't know what to do.
Yep.
So we respond badly. We respond out of an emotional reaction. If we have practiced how we want to respond, then we have language within us now that we can go to. I've tried this out, you know, I've practiced it. So you feel a bit more comfortable about how you might want to respond to that person. You might simply want to say hello and walk past, right? But if you haven't practiced that moment, then when you come to that moment, you're going to probably want to disappear and go the other way because your emotional reaction will be, I don't want to talk to this person. I don't want to see them.
Yeah.
I'm feeling angry or I'm feeling nervous or whatever it might be. And you instantly try and avoid it. So by practicing that moment, practicing being with that person, practicing what you might want to say to that person will help you to feel a strength about that too. And so when you come up against that person, you've already practiced how you might want to respond and you're feeling calmer in yourself. So you're allowing your cognitive processes to have more dominion than your emotional reaction. And it's very empowering and it's very it will grow you, mature. It will mature you as well because you start to, as you practice this, you will start to realize that your adrenal, you know, adrenaline isn't rushing, cortisol isn't, you know, your heart's not pumping, you're not feeling like overwhelmed. It's like, wow, this is great. And you can start to feel like you have more control in situations. But it takes practice. It takes practice. Feels weird talking to somebody that's not sitting there, a person you don't particularly like. And you might want to say to some things to this person that, you know, get it out, what you want to say to them that you're not able to say to their face, right? Because it's just going to cause an issue or a fight, you know, or discomfort, whatever. So you can use the two chair work, do this on your own with nobody else in the house because the last thing you want is to have somebody walk in and then you would feel embarrassed and you don't want that feeling attached to what you're doing. So make sure you're on your own. You don't even have to have a chair there. You could just have a pillow, you know, or a cushion. Just imagine them sitting there and what you might want to say to them. And that could be quite quite bad to begin with, you know, a lot of stuff in there that you might want to say that you haven't been able to and get it out, right? And then start practicing. How would you want to respond to this person if you see them in the street? How do you want to talk to them? Or if you even want to, or can I just pass them by and just say hi and smile and keep walking?
Yeah.
All right. And so we're not cutting off relationship. We're saying we're still there, but, you know, you may not be in my world and that's okay, you know, but it's not that I'm trying to avoid you. And that causes more conflict because the other person's saying, oh, I saw you disappear around the corner and want to talk to me. Yeah, we have all, and then that person's carrying more stuff. It just goes on and on like a snowball. So where do we pull in these feelings, pull in these emotional reactions and go, hang on a minute, you're like a runaway, you know, carriage speeding horses on them. I can't control you. I can't stop you. So, you know, learn to work with them but don't allow them to have control and dominion over your life.
Have you been involved with, like, either group work or with pairs of people just with reconciliation kind of things?
Mm.
Like, it seems to be something that's really hard for us to do. The biggest example I can think of is what happened in South Africa with the Truth and Reconciliation Commission there? That was really successful, it would seem. That's a fairly remarkable and unique thing.
I think when you've got, you know, extreme trauma that's been across a nation like that, or getting down and sitting around and expressing the deep grief around that trauma is really important. Because, you know, trauma needs to be expressed. We can't hold it in. And that's a different... I think that's more about reconciling trauma in ourself, you know, trying to find a place for it so it doesn't... And allowing it to work through it, ourselves to work through it so it doesn't control our life. Because it will, if we can't work through it. So community trauma is massive. You got to work with community trauma much differently than you would with individual trauma.
Yeah.
Because it's just so many people are feeling so many different emotions. This is about grief and allowing people to grieve, and that can be a painful process, but an extremely healthy one to do. So I can't imagine people doing that in relationship with each other, like grieving first because they're angry. So, you know, they're not going to sit there and go, well, I'm grieving my, you know, what's happened. They just go to anger. So we've got to know how to respond in situations that will cause us to feel overwhelmed in the moment. Practice what you want to say and get stronger at how you carry yourself, and you will, you know, we can, what have I got here? If you don't take charge of our thinking or thoughts, they will take charge of us. I'm thinking that's in our thinking, but it's same with our feelings. If we don't take charge of our feelings will take charge of us. We will be driven by the feelings we have rather than allowing ourselves to have a thinking process as well. So try and bring the two together would be wonderful. You know, yes, I know I feel like this, but this is how I want to respond. Right? So even though I feel intimidated, I want to be able to hold my ground and say what I want to say. So how do I do that without losing myself in this? And you're going to have to practice that in the language you want to use. And the more that you get familiar with that, the more that it will become natural for you to respond like that. And we can take on new language. Like, new language is good too, you know. Yeah. It will diffuse. If you keep using the same sort of language to express how you're feeling, people tend to think, oh, you know, there she is. She's feeling this again, you know. Rah, rah, rah.
Yeah.
She's down again, whatever. Yeah. But or he's down again, whatever. But new language, like, you know, engaging with people or feeling secure, or, you know, just some new language in there that might help you to describe different ways you're feeling or different ways to experience a situation. No? So if we keep using the same language to explain something, we'll believe what we're feeling about that. So if I say to myself, oh, every time I walk into this meeting, I just feel overwhelmed by everyone sitting in here and what's going on and rah-de-rah, right? Yeah. If you were to go in there and have practice walking into the meeting, where you're going to sit, knowing that it's going to be a little bit stressful and how you might want to respond, do I want to respond or do I just want to listen?
Yeah.
You know, kind of set up something before you go in there so that you're not stuck in this, oh, I don't want to go in here because it's just full of people. I don't want to be around. And you're stuck in the emotional reaction. You can now you can't logically sit in that meeting and bring something up that you might think is helpful because you're too busy thinking about how uncomfortable it is. So you've lost your ground and you've now been driven by that feeling and not being able to actually present what you wanted to present at that meeting.
So how do you deal with if you've got two people and one has hurt the other and they're trying to reconcile? Like, how do you do that if you've got them in your counselling chambers? Sorry, yeah. Chamber's the wrong word.
Okay, so I don't like working with couples in conflict. It's not the way that I would work. When I work with couples, I tend to work with them once together. And then I see them separately and then we come back together at the end. Because I find that, you know, when we've got conflict in relationship, often that conflict is coming from somewhere else. It's not really about the relationship. It's the things that we might be carrying through old belief systems or patterns that we've been living most of our life. So, yeah, and then we can, once we've kind of worked through some of the other individual stuff, then we can come together and look at the relationship and what's stopping that from developing and growing. So, yeah, I don't look at conflict. It's very hard to sit with somebody who's going, she said, he said, okay?
Yeah.
We're going to get nowhere.
Yeah.
And I'm not a battleground for somebody to dump, you know, all their he, she said, stuff on.
Yeah, you're just getting drawn in.
I can't. You know, I'm going to get that's emotionally charged.
Yeah.
Because you'll be thinking, oh, that doesn't sound good, or, oh, you shouldn't have said that. And then suddenly I'll be involved in that.
And suddenly
that.
You're like, how could you?
Yeah. How could you say that? Like, well, how could you behave like that to her or him? You know, and there we go. Now we're emotionally we are involved. And that is not where I want to be. I do not want to be involved in that conflict. I want to be able to stay in my cognitive self and be able to listen and hear and be not swayed by the emotional stuff that is happening.
How do you deal with, like, whether they're there together or separately, and some person actually has done something quite nasty?
Mm.
And a lot of our responsibility, I don't want to have anything to do with that person.
Mm.
But you have to.
Mm.
But it's more than just you have to. You actually have to be able to have empathy for them to do your job. I assume.
Well, no, that's good. Now, empathy is a good thing. Empathy is about us, and it's not about me.
You can't help someone out if you're sitting there thinking about the awful thing they've done, right? Like, you've got to.
I think that it takes. I think it takes a lot of being able to process really well, because you can work with somebody that has upset you. You can still come in without conflict, okay? But it's going to take somebody in that relationship to be the bigger person and know how to deal with that. If they don't have that skill set, you're right. You will probably just get the people.
But
in
I'm
the
saying
room.
So. I'm saying, how do you, the counselor, and this person, and you're like, you're shocked, and you're like, and appalled, and all that, and like, you know, and most of us would be like, well, I'm just not ever having anything to do with that person again now that I know what they like. But as a counsellor, you've got to be better than that.
Mm. It can be hard sometimes because, yes, you do hear some things that you think, that's just, yeah, I don't like. You know, I can feel the physical reaction in me.
Yeah.
But that, even that, you know, I've got to sit with that. As a counsellor, I can't, you know, that's my reaction. That's not their reaction. That's my reaction to something. That's for me to process. It's certainly not for them to process. So I have to be able to know how to boundary myself and hold myself in difficult situations where I'm hearing things that are difficult, that seem unfair or unjust.
Yeah.
Right? And I don't like injustice, so yeah. You know, that fires me off straight away when I think there's an unfairness there that doesn't seem right. That's my opinion. It's not my job to bring that in there. My job is to probably help them become more aware of that. And so my questioning may be, so, you know, how did that work out for you? What was the end result after that? Was it? Did you find that a healthy process for you, the way you did that, you know? And so maybe it's more about, it's not about pointing out stuff like you did this wrong, you did that wrong.
No, I don't imagine you'd ever do that.
No, I'd never do that.
Yeah.
Because then I'd be mum sitting in the room, wouldn't I? Can't have mum sitting in the room.
At best you'd be mum, yeah.
So, yeah, it's about being able to sit in discomfort without reacting to it, because there's always a backstory. And somebody has to stay logically present.
Yeah.
We can't all disappear into emotional land. Yeah. You know, somebody has to stay present. And that can, you know, it's a skill set, Aaron, being able to pull yourself back, knowing when something is upsetting you enough to go, okay, this is enough for me. I can't actually do any more of this, because if I do any more, it's going to be detrimental. So why would I want to do that?
I guess it also helps that you've got a role there. You're like my purpose, I'm being paid, I've got a degree, it's my job, it says I'm a counsellor therapist on my card. Like, my role is not to get swept away by this stuff, but to serve
these people. And that's why they have the therapeutic hour, right? So, is within that hour, in therapy, you don't go over an hour. You go under an hour, but you don't go over an hour. You can only hold the attention of somebody for about 20 minutes, pretty much. And so there is what they call the therapeutic hour. Anything over that is exhausting.
Yeah. But I'm saying it must be easier too to behave because you've got that role.
Well, we all wear our caps, you know. Yeah. So do you think that I'm going to have those amazing skills in every part of my life? Probably not.
We'll call PJ up.
Yeah, he would probably say, you know, she does pretty good. But there will be times when I don't do well.
Yeah.
That he sees when I don't do well. And when I see when I don't do well.
But I guess,
and that's okay.
I guess I'm looking for some insight for us untrained individuals about what to do in those situations, because our cultural, and maybe it's just the part of our culture I come from, being a guy, and like just not even just being a guy, because I know women do this too, that where you just think, I can't have anything more to do with this person.
Hmm.
And you just close off from them, and then you get to your middle age and it's such a long list of people who you may have been closed off to, and you think, well, this is just not actually how I want to do it. I want to be more evolved so that I can still work with people, even though there's stuff about them that's frustrated me in the past. Like, I don't have to stay focused. I don't have to keep score of who's a good person and who's not, and all that
tiring
sort of stuff. Yeah.
Because people change too, and we've got to allow
that.
Yeah,
we've got to give people a chance as well. Yeah. So, but how do you... Yeah, I guess I'm looking for the skills that you've got and you will have developed as a counsellor.
Mm.
And part of it, I know, is that during your training, like they say, you all had to go through counselling yourselves as part of the training, so that you're not carrying your stuff into the counselling room.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, what are your skills? What's your secret, Marie? That's what we want to know.
Well, you can live my life and you might have the secret, because it's about experience, I believe, Aaron.
Okay.
Your experience of life and how much you're willing to really look at it and weigh things up and drop things off that aren't good and pick things up that may develop you more. So if you're not willing to develop, then you'll stay as you are. Nothing will ever change. It'll just keep the grind going. If you are wanting to develop, then that's going to take some tenacity to take a look at oneself, not others, but oneself, and how I react. So that's all about my responsibility. Regardless of what's going on around me, my responsibility is how I react. I don't always get that right, because we are driven, we are emotional, we are human beings. So, yes, of course, it rises to the top when we're challenged in certain areas, or we may feel injustice or not heard, or, you know, this is unfair. And so, yes, we rise up out of a righteous feeling of wanting to put that right. And there's nothing wrong with that. It's how we do it, you know. And not only that, where's our responsibility towards other people when we can see they're getting to that point of being, you know, we're pushing their buttons and we know we're doing it. You know, it's pretty cruel.
We do that though, don't we?
Yeah, we do, and it's nasty. So again, the only person that can stop that is ourself. So the only person who is going to pull ourself up is going to be yourself. So really, are you an amazing human being who is willing to do that? Because that's what it's about, development of self. Am I going to say to me, hang on a minute, let's just take a moment here. Let's think of a different way, or what's the new word I want to use? You know, pick up some new language, because new language, like I've talked to you about before, will create a new response. So, you know, I've been using the word, you know, being engaged lately. I love that word, you know, to engage with something. And it's just new language, and it feels nice. It's a nice word to use, or, you know, to be connected, or anything that we use is that to describe something that is different than the way we've always done it. We'll create a new way of doing, or a new feeling around that. Mm. New response.
So, folks, we're talking to Marie Harworth, our local counsellor therapist. Comes in every second Tuesday. We started. What tipped this discussion off at the start? Where I was talking about how, well, the issues around social media raising our anger levels, just generally across the board, and this is backed up by a bit of research these days. Where was I going to go with that?
I don't know, but I can probably end it up with, you know, because we're going to round this up. Yeah. Are we still?
Yeah. Oh, that's what I was going to. That's what I was going to say. That maybe social media is a chance for us actually to evolve, chance for us to be. We are being confronted far more often by our reactions, like in your words, like being confronted by our own reactions to people. And hopefully, my hope is that more and more of us come to that point where we're like, I'm sick of this.
Yes.
And I want to find a different way to deal with this. And this, it could be good for us.
It will be good for us.
As a culture. I'm just sick of waiting.
Well, look, we can all be sick of waiting, but really it's only ever going to be our responsibility individually. So we can't do this massive change. It's an individual change, and nobody sees that, so nobody encourages us. So it's very difficult, Aaron, because nobody's going to say, hey, I noticed you did that. Well, somebody might, but most people don't go, hey, I noticed you did that differently, or, you know, the way you responded helped me to discover more about that situation. Yeah, we don't talk like that, do we? So, we don't get the feedback of people noticing that I didn't do what I normally do.
I had a friend, it was a flatmate, became a really good friend years ago, obviously, and the three of us were having this debate about where we were going to flat next, and about halfway through the debate, he was such a decent guy, and he said, I really want to thank you guys for not being, we're just having a debate here, you're not trying to use manipulative things or that kind of stuff, where you've just been honest and open. And I thought to myself, I hadn't really been, but it really moved me to try harder next time, because he was just so incredibly decent about it. It kind of like forced me to try and raise my game.
Isn't that awesome? So that little snippet had such an impact on you that you can remember that now and what that feeling was. So that's the impact of such a small little thing.
I think I felt a little ashamed.
Well, you would have, and that's awesome.
And I hadn't been very devious or anything. Yeah. I wasn't really being very devious.
No, but you probably weren't at the level he thought you were.
Yeah, that's right. He was giving more credit than I deserved. And it just forced me to,
So look at that. And so we could take that one little snippet and just keep looking at that and dissecting that and realizing there's a lot that happened in that moment for you.
Yeah.
You know, a realization, an awareness that grew in you that, heck, he thought I was giving my all. I wasn't giving my all. I wasn't actually at the level he thought I was. But, man, I respect the guy for seeing something in me that I didn't think somebody else would see.
Yeah.
And maybe that's good.
Maybe that's what we have to do, is actually believe in people despite the evidence that we're focused on right now.
Oh, amen. Give people a chance to change. Give people a chance. You know, even in conflict, if we respond differently, that may cause a different response in the other person.
Yeah.
If you were to do a left fielder in an argument and go, you know what, I'm really hearing this from you. I can hear this is, really affecting you. And I'm really sorry that, whatever. And see the difference. Whoa, you might stop somebody in their tracks because they are so used to responding so badly.
I've kind of seen things like that happen. And sometimes the reaction is really funny because they just like,
I need you to fight back.
Yeah, I'm ready to fight.
Yeah. And so you can defuse the situation, and the other person's left floundering because the only way they know how to deal with this is through conflict, is through having somebody push up against them and cause a reaction. It's not a nice that's not a good, healthy place for growth, okay, because you're getting growth through negativity. It's not through a coming together and an agreement.
Yeah.
So it's not going to be healthy. So, well, shall we end up? Or we end up with this great little thing again. Your diet is not only what you eat. So, folks, have a look at what you are receiving through your feelings, how you're responding, your thinking. Is your
thought diet? Is this what you're talking about?
How your feelings are coming alongside your thinking. If you are letting your feelings overtake your thinking and you're responding out of an emotional reaction, how do I stop that? How do I give myself time to allow my brain to come back online and respond the way I want to respond? Maybe try some two-chair work where you practice how you want to respond. Get some new language in there, or just learn to say hello to the person comfortably, so that when you see them, you can just say hi and not have this overwhelming reaction like, oh, don't want to even see them. Oh, I'm out of here.
Yep.
Just practice that for yourself, and you might find that you feel empowered by that, and actually those feelings of intimidation or embarrassment or whatever it is aren't overpowering, and you can actually walk past somebody or involve yourself in a group with people in there that you don't particularly get on with, because you've diffused that emotional response you have towards them.
Yeah, yeah. All right, Marie, thank you very much for coming in this morning.
You're welcome.
All right, folks, it's the end of the show for the day. I hope you've enjoyed it, and you'll hear from me again tomorrow morning.